be out in exactly 1 hour, and we've got 8 bills to do. So
this will be quick, Mr. Chair, and if I could just add to the last bill that you talked about, Akeley also, of course, the mythical birthplace of Paul Bunyan, which gives it some significance.
More trivia. Senator Scogin, Senate File 468.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. What you have in Senate File 468 is a request from a constituent who served in the military and would like Interstate 94 from the Wisconsin border to the North Dakota border, which goes through part of my district, through the Fergus Falls area, named the POW MIA Memorial Highway. Mm-hmm. It is a pretty simple bill. We have had conversations about what this might cost to put a sign up at each of the 11 highway rests along that stretch of highway as it cuts across Minnesota, and a POW MIA flag. And we have conversations that some service groups, military groups, and others would like to participate in the cost once it is established. In tough economic times, I just want to be very transparent here that and maybe to so we don't get confused, but Interstate 94 already has two names in Minnesota, and I just want the committee to know that. It is called the Eisenhower International or Interstate Highway System. It's also called the Purple Hearts Trail as it cuts across Minnesota, and Highway 169 is already designated POW MIA Highway. So the committee should just know that as you consider naming Interstate 94 the POW MIA.
Senator Scogin, was this now is it the Purple Heart Trail or the POW Trail that is being connected from one state to the next, or is it both?
Well, based on the fact that the Purple Hearts Trail is attached to Interstate 94, I would guess that's the one that's going state to state.
Sure. Okay. All right.
But I don't know that for sure, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, so could you share with us why we would do the 169 and the 94 with the same name, how that, you know, would...
I really couldn't tell you why we would do both. I want you to know that we already have named 169, given it that designation.
Thank you.
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, this is probably more informational also. I'm looking at naming a rest area after a fallen soldier from my area. And there was concern, we got feedback from MnDOT about naming roads, and somebody will say it's, you know, there's an accident at the Purple Heart Trail, and it's like, well, where's the Purple Heart Trail, you know?
So right.
That was a concern that was expressed to us as we're looking at naming some sections of road also.
Mm-hmm. Senator Olsen, you're correct. MnDOT traditionally doesn't really like having their roads designated with a designated name like the Purple Heart Trail or the POW-MIA trail. Senator, this is for the rest stops, though, to put up a marker for POWs and
That's POW correct. There'd be a historical marker, kind of a description of the POW-MIA legacy at each rest stop and a flag.
Right. At each rest stop?
There's 11 that cut across on 94.
Okay, and then as we do with every other either signage or rest area, we always ask for the committee to pay for these flags and markers, and I believe that that's stated here in your bill on line 11. That's that reference to 160. Is that correct, Ms. Boyle?
161. Oh,
161. It's on line 14. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
So just as long as the POW MIA folks know that, you know, they're going to be responsible for maintaining, you know, the flagpole, the flag, the marker, all of that. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Scogin, do you know whether any of these other, or whether any of the rest stops along 94 from North Dakota to Wisconsin have not already been designated to some special memorial purpose? That this would be
designated
in conflict
as,
with?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, designated POW MIA or
no,
some
no,
other?
No. Whether sometimes, as Senator Rolstein indicated, there are rest stops that because an accident or crash or some tragic event, a trooper getting killed, that the because the although we have done otherwise, the DOT does not approve of renaming the highway and putting up a sign for that section of it. And I'm thinking of the state trooper that was murdered along Highway 35 and who was families were constituents of mine. And we did put up a Sean Silvera memorial highway for that stretch of the road. But I think there also, or it occurs to me that there may also be memorials at rest stops because I think they prefer them rather than putting up signs on the highway.
I believe
and that there may be some along here in these rest stops, and I wonder if you know of any and if there would be a conflict because maybe there's a memorial with already a flag and et cetera. And I wouldn't, as much as I would, I don't have any problem with this bill, I wouldn't want to indicate to the people for whom an original memorial was kind of sacred ground, if you will, that they're being pushed aside, even though this isn't a very important, you know, way of recognizing POWs, MIAs.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I believe that some of the rest areas are designated to memorials and honors of different kinds. I don't know if they all are or not. I know when I talked to the department, their biggest concern was not getting something in the rest area. It was more adding another sign to the off-ramp and on-ramp, which when you take a picture of those, it is just one right after the other of what you're either leaving or you're about to enter, and it does get pretty
Mr.
clumsy
Chairman,
sometimes.
When the bill leaves us as a policy committee, would it go to the floor, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest?
Yes. Would this bill, when it leaves us as a policy committee, go to the floor?
No, Senator Rest. We're going to keep this bill here for possible inclusion. There's some work that needs to be done, obviously.
Well,
there's some information we need to get, Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, I support your bill, but I would be interested in knowing what other kinds of memorial designations are at those rest stops so that you know there's compatibility, et cetera.
Senator Scogin, why don't we do this? Why don't we put your bill on the table, and if you could talk with the MnDOT folks and then get back to Senator Rest, and then we'll take it off the table at the appropriate time, and we'll put it in an omnibus bill if the committee decides. Is that
perfect?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Scogin. So Senator Scoy moves that Senate File 468 be laid on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Folks, we do need to pick it up a little bit. Senator Scoy, you're next here with Senate File 887. But we do have number 8 on the agenda, Senator Carlson's bill, and we've got people here from not only out of town but out of state to testify. So let's pick her up a little bit. Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm here with the third of my 8 counties' request for a Veteran Memorial Highway. This is Norman County, and they would like to propose to have the Norman County Veterans Memorial Highway go from the North Dakota border to the city of Manolman on Trunk Highway 200. They understand that they need to raise the money locally for the signage, that the department will design a sign and help them erect it. The Ada American Legion is fully prepared to do. One thing I would mention, members, is when I was here before, I talked about the Otter Tail County. Veteran Memorial Highway was the first county. These counties, all of these highways will interlink. so they eventually will all connect up and be part of a group of veteran memorial highways in northwestern Minnesota.
Well, Senator Scoy, there is method to your madness here.
Well, Mr. Chair, there is method to something anyway.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, you're expecting the Department of Transportation to pay for the sign?
No.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, no. The American ADA American Legion will raise the money locally for the signs. MnDOT does erect them. They supply them with a design, and then they do erect the signs, but the local folks have to raise the money.
So making it subject to, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, making it subject to 161, 139 means that it's non-state funds that are the source of the revenue for the sign.
That's correct.
Like just like the other bill we just
right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Senator Scoy, we're going to send your bill out of here, but we're also going to make sure that we keep the language for an omnibus bill as well. So Senator Scoy moves Senate file 887 be recommended pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, I just...
Senator Fishbach.
I just wanted to remind... the few of us that remember Senator Oliver, after we've gone through the naming of things, Senator Oliver was always opposed to naming things, and sometimes, because we've had a few of these this year, so I just thought I'd remind everyone of his opposition. I think there's only like five people at this table that probably served with him, but he was very opposed to naming roads.
Thank he was opposed you. To a lot of things, Senator. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I missed a great opportunity at his retirement party of not having a Senate resolution naming one of his local roads for him.
Mr. Chair, I just spent last week with former Senator Oliver out in Washington at a Great Lakes Association meeting, and he's in great form. He's enjoying his retirement. And
he was always well. Very jovial. Yeah. Senator Pretner, Solon, Senate File 847.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I'm here to present this bill, which creates an innovative pilot program for the cities of Duluth, St. Paul, Inver Grove Heights, West St. Paul, and South St. Paul in managing cases involving invalid driver's licenses. According to the Department of Public Safety, 221,268 people in the state of Minnesota had their driving licenses or their driving privileges revoked last year. Unfortunately, too many of these individuals continue to drive without a valid license in Minnesota. Moreover, many of these individuals are arrested over and over again for this type of offense. So what we are doing now is not working. According to a AAA study, 20% of all fatal crashes in America involve an invalid driver's license. This bill, or actually the invalid driver, this bill is an attempt to help individuals get out of this unending cycle of fines and poor life choices. In conjunction with appropriate consequences, this bill will give local prosecutors a new tool to allow for a meaningful diversion program when it is appropriate. And with me today to testify in support of the bill is the St. Paul City Attorney John Choi, Duluth Assistant City Attorney Gary Schmies, and City Attorney Corey Land. And I also have Duluth City Attorney Gunnar Johnson here today. I think Mr. Choi is going to speak first.
Mr. Choi.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Choi, St. Paul City Attorney for the record. Thank you for having us here today. The bill that is before you represents a considerable amount of work on the part of the City Attorney's Office amongst the cities that are engaged here. I want to thank Senator Pretner Solon for bringing this to the legislature. In St. Paul, we have 15,000 cases that are presented for misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor prosecution per year. One-third of those cases involve individuals with invalid driver's licenses. That's a significant amount of resources that we put into dealing with these particular offenders. And many of these individuals who come before the court are repeat offenders. And in a lot of ways, these repeat offenders kind of fall into one of two categories. There's the first category of an individual who really ignores the law over and over and over again, and the appropriate sanction there is to have consequences, and we do the best job that we can. There's a Star Tribune article that should be in your packets, and on the last page there's a graphic kind of telling you kind of how many people are out there, but there are 14,000 individuals in the state of Minnesota who have been ticketed over five times since January of 1997 to 2007, over that 10-year period. But there's also a group of individuals who maybe less than five times, who do want to get valid, but because of the reality of paying these fines, these outstanding fees, and the inability to navigate the court system and DPS, and also I think just basic life skills, there's a group that does want to get valid, but because of what's before them, we see a lot of people just kind of getting into this cycle over and over and over again. So what this bill is trying to do is try to develop a way in which we could help that latter group figure out a way so that they don't come back into the court system again. On most days, the criminal justice system, it's like an assembly line, and we're doing the best that we can to manage that workload. But this bill allows us to stop that assembly line and to think of a creative way in which we can focus on positive outcomes in the criminal justice system. The most important part of this bill, and I think the reason why we're here today, is we thought through why we wanted what we needed to have a successful diversion program, is to have the carrot, which would be this bill would allow for essentially a diversion license for individuals who would be in a certain category as long as they participate in the diversion program. And that would mean that they would have to make regular payments so that they can make good on their outstanding fines. They have to attend class that would focus on financial management skills, cognitive skills, learning about how to get valid in the system. In addition to that, there's no expense at all to the taxpayer, because this would be a unique private public partnership in which we would look to contract with a private entity to kind of help administer this with the local prosecution offices and the Department of Public Safety. So with that, I'll end, and I'll turn it over to, I think, Terry Schmies.
Thank you, Chairman, Senators. It seems like it's taken me 21 years to get here. I think I've been in this system for a long time. I was a police officer when I first started my law enforcement career. Went to law school. I prosecuted in Chisago County. I prosecuted in St. Paul, and now I'm prosecuting in Duluth. And what I found consistent is I deal with these individuals on a daily basis. And I'll ask them, why are you driving? Your license is revoked or suspended. And I get the whole gamut of reasons why. Am my child sick? I need a job. There, a lot of these individuals don't have access to mass transportation as they do in the city. So they, out of their desperate people doing desperate acts, knowing full well they're violating the law, they want to get valid. And this is dealing with economics. We're dealing with people. There's no amnesty here. They have to pay their due punishment. They have to go through their suspensions that's dictated by DPS. But what this is once they've been punished and once they've been gone through what is necessary that the state deems appropriate, now they have to pay the money to get back to be reinstated. And that's where the hurdle is. And it's a high hurdle for a lot of individuals. A lot of people that I deal with are low income. They don't have the $1,000 to pay to get reinstated. What this program does, it gives the law an assistance to get these people back in compliance. We have many laws that get them revoked or suspended. We have few methods to get them back in the good graces of the compliance under the law of Minnesota. This isn't unique to Minnesota. Between New York and California, the states are, everyone's at odds what to do. This is a very unique approach because it's the gateway into this program is by the prosecutor. He reviews the record, determines whether they're eligible, and that's the best part of this. No, it's not a privilege to be in the program. Or right, it is a privilege of being in the program, and that privilege can be taken away if they don't comply with the terms they've agreed upon. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Land?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Corey Land, and I am the city attorney for South St. Paul and West St. Paul, and my firm also represents the city of Invergrove Heights. So fortunately for you, you don't have to listen to three more city attorneys. You can just listen to one. But with all the difficult decisions that you have to make before you, the intent was to kind of throw you a softball on this one. We think that city attorneys are very, very concerned about the overburdened court system, and we're trying to come up with innovative ideas to alleviate the burden and the overworked judges and the court staff, and we think this is one innovative idea that everybody can embrace. It's pre-court diversion, which is what court administration has been begging for. It eliminates the need for prosecutors, judges, and public defenders, which is what public defenders have been begging for. It's a long-term solution, which I think is the most important, to get people out of the revolving door that they're in and help them and teach them to stay out of it. It's simply a two-year pilot program. I think it encompasses cities with a wide variety of people. It's a city of the first class, a city of the second class, and a city of the third class. So we're trying to get all the whole scope and the gamut of cities to see if this process will work in these with the different demographics and all the different issues that those cities face. It's a nice mix for the program. And if it works, the intent is that we'd be back before you asking to go statewide. We frankly don't know for sure what's going to happen with the court system. I think everybody's probably heard Justice Magnuson's speech, and frankly, the man is big and he scares me. So he is intending to impose a moratorium on the prosecution of misdemeanors. If that happens, this diversion program would allow us to continue to deal with these kinds of violations. So I think that's an important factor to consider. So we hope that the committee takes that into consideration, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you. Oh, Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, I think that this is a true effort at reform of the judicial system, within the judicial system. It does not cost the state any money, and it is likely to cut costs for the judicial system, and it still holds the party responsible. I think this is exactly what we're looking for as we're looking at cost-effective ways to solve our budget.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I support this bill and would move it when you're ready to do that.
Okay. I see Ms. Kaczynski is here. And I know that speaking with Ms. Berezovsky that you'd worked on this a little bit. If you would want to provide some testimony, I think the committee should hear what you have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name, for the record, is Joan Kaczynski. I'm the Driver Services Director. We did work very closely with all the folks at the table. Being at the pilot program, or because it is a pilot program, I think we're going to find that potentially it might not be the perfect answer and the perfect solution, but my personal opinion is we have to start somewhere to help these folks get valid privileges, maintain driving privileges. As a department, we remain neutral on the bill. That was my personal opinion.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Kopchinski. But your personal opinion carries lots of weight here, and so does Ms. McCormick. So, Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last couple of times we've had report requirements come through this committee and the Judiciary Committee have asked that we put in a qualifier to make that report electronically available, Senator Solon, just so that we're not having our commissioners print a lot of paper copies, but that is available. And I think Ms. Berezovsky did the last amendment for me, so I'd like to move an amendment to that effect.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Solon.
So, Senator Moi, you're just asking that the report be electronic. I have no objection to that. We can accommodate that.
Yeah, we've been trying to get into the, I don't know, 19th century around here, so. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moi, does this do it on 3.30 after the period The report must be made electronically and available in print only on request. Does
that do it? That will work.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. The Sieben motion is in front of us now. Senate file 847, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Further discussion? Seeing none. Senator Colt.
Sorry, Senator Murphy. Senator Solon, I'm just wondering, there's many reasons that people have their license revoked. I have some concern that you are there's failure to provide vehicle insurance, incurring three misdemeanors, but also DWI is on here. And so I guess I have some concern that in giving a break or being seen as being softer on DWI offenses. And how would you respond to that?
Senator Pretner Solon.
Yes, Mr. Schmies will respond to that, or Mr. Choi.
Chairman, Senator, insurance is required. Anybody who is in this program would have to show proof of insurance. In regards,
can we pull the mic a little closer and then turn your volume up a tad bit? No, the one on your larynx. Okay. Thank you.
Forgot about that one.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the insurance is required. Anybody into the program would need to have insurance and should keep proof of that and keep in compliance with that part of the law. In regards to DWI, I come across a lot of those cases, and there's a point in time where someone who has a DWI, they're going to suffer a punishment, and that punishment is equal to everybody, and everybody goes through that punishment. What we're addressing here is a businessman who has a bank account that has thousands of dollars in it versus somebody who is a seasonal worker. The businessman can pay to get reinstated. The other individual can't. It doesn't make that person more of a threat. They're each treated equally, but one is more financially resourceful as far as savings and his ability to pay. So it's not a, I don't deem this a dangerous approach. I think it's a very fair approach across the board. Like I said earlier, there is no amnesty. There is no short circuits of revocations. Everything is the same. Once that person has complied, has gone through an alcohol assessment, has gone through paying attempt of paying the fine, any jail time which isn't on the first, fourth degree DWI. But what we're getting at here is it's an economic barrier. And by having this program available to people, they can continue to work. They can get the diversionary license. They can make payments on their offset amount of money they owe to the state, and they will be responsible for everything that has been ordered by the judge. This just allows an assistance to get them there. What we don't want is that person not having those funds in hand and then being forced to drive, knowing full well they're revoked. That's where we get into the problem. They get another DWI, and then the cycle gets deeper and deeper. So To get back to your response, yes, it would allow a person with a DWI, but that person would have to comply with all the terms that's been ordered, and only after that point in time, when it comes strictly to the reinstatement fee, that person would be into the program.
All right, on the Sieben motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you.
I wanted to vote no, Mr. Chair, but you were very quick. Mr. Chair, I intended to vote no.
Just let so the record reflect that you voted.
You were very quick. That's why.
Senator Latz, are you with us? Yes, good. This is another suspension issue here, folks. Senate file 884. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Recently, the State Judicial Council, under the advocacy of the Chief Justice, certified a new and lengthy list of offenses as payables when they are charged, which means ordinarily, prior to this certification, people would have to go into court to answer for the charge, such as a driving after suspension or a driving after revocation. But if they are payables, all they have to do is write a check and mail in the citation.
And by virtue of that, because the payable amount will be under $300, whether it starts out as a misdemeanor charge or a petty misdemeanor charge, it becomes a petty misdemeanor upon the entry of the conviction and the sentence, which is just the fine under $300. Under current statute, there are automatic suspensions or withdrawals of driving privileges when a conviction like that hits the Department of Public Safety's records for entry onto the driver's license record. So if you're convicted of a driving after suspension, a driving after revocation, a driving after cancellation, or driving after disqualification, if that's the conviction, you will get suspended again or revoked again. And similarly, with no insurance or no proof of insurance violations. Now, the bill that you have before you would take those convictions, which will become petty misdemeanors, as payables, and would direct that it would provide that there would not be a subsequent suspension or withdrawal of driving privileges. Otherwise, people who write out a check and pay the citation, they might get a surprise notice in the mail. So I didn't realize it, but, you know, I didn't go to court for this. No prosecutor told me, no judge told me, but now all of a sudden I'm getting suspended. I didn't know it was going to happen that way. Maybe I'd changed my mind or done it differently. So it's an attempt to avoid that that surprise and also to pull some more of these merry-go-round cases out of the system. I do have an author's amendment that council has prepared to put it in the language that the author intends, and that's the A1 amendment.
Senator Skoy moves the A1 amendment. It's an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Mr. Chair, when the time comes, I'm going to have an A3 amendment as well, but first I'd like to ask a couple of witnesses to testify on behalf of the bill. The first is Paul Berchi. It was actually his idea. He's a city attorney, prosecuting attorney.
Senator Letch, you got 5 minutes.
Thank you.
You can split it up however you want.
I'll ask my witnesses to be succinct. Mr. Berchi's here. His firm represents 8 cities as prosecuting attorneys, and he can explain the basis for his suggestion.
Thank you. I do prosecute in Maple Grove, Robbinsdale, other cities in Hennepin County. I do defense work, too. We see a number of people that get into this merry-go-round, and I think the main thing to focus on is that they're not, when they just mail in a fine, they're not told this could happen, and yet it happens. If they appear in court, there's an opportunity to advise people that this could happen. So I think it's a good idea. I don't know of prosecutors that oppose it.
Is there anybody here that's opposed to this bill? Well, Ms. McCormick put her hand up, Senator Latz. So, well, we have issues then.
It's a financial issue, I understand, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
I'm virtually done. I mean, if. I wouldn't be opposed to expanding it, but I think there's other issues regarding to that. But I see that this is would be a practical bill. That's all.
Thank you. I also have with me Travis Schwantes, public defender from Stillwater.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Travis Schwantes. I run the public defender's office in Stillwater. We see dozens of these cases in court every day. And even with the new payable law, we think that this is a smart law. It will make sure that people are able to get reinstated sooner.
And that's better for everyone's public safety, Mr. Chairman.
That's much better to have, you know, have people licensed and, you know, we know who they are out there instead of driving around with no insurance, no license. Ms. McCormick, would you want to come to the table? And Senator Latch, you had another amendment as well. And
yes, I can deal with that right now if you wish.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman,
what's this amendment do?
The A3 amendment, it specifically addresses the no proof of insurance and no insurance payable convictions. And I asked to have that separated out because I think it's a slightly different animal than just the pure driving after withdrawal, cumulative suspensions. But because these were also on the State Judicial Council's payables list statewide now, the same principle would apply. People are just going to write a check, mail in the citation for no proof of insurance or no insurance, and they're going to get a surprise suspension in the mail from the Department of Public Safety. So I thought from a policy standpoint, it still makes sense, but I wanted the committee to be able to consider that question separately from just an author's amendment.
All right. Ms. McCormick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, Driver and Vehicle Services Director. Mike, our division, division's concern, we're not taking an actual position on the merits of the bill. What our concern would be, and I just want to ensure that the committee is aware of the fact that we weren't asked to do a fiscal note, but we had some concerns. The process we have to use currently, and all of you know the concerns we have with our current information system, we have to have a staff manually verify whether the conviction is a misdemeanor or a petty misdemeanor. And so there right now our staff person probably has to manually review about 100 convictions from the courts on a daily basis. The estimate would be that that would be increased to at least 500 per day. And so it would require additional staffing for us. The only other possibility would be programming, and it'd be a difficult programming that would have to occur at this time because we really need to interface with the courts to make this possible. And that may be part of our redesign project, but at this point I can't tell you where we would put that in the four-year project that we're getting our plans developed on. So the issue for us is just a matter of being able to efficiently communicate with the courts, and the fact that this isn't something that we get information on. We get information on the statutory citation. We do not get information on whether it's a misdemeanor or a petty misdemeanor, and we may need to look at the driving record to determine that if you're talking about traffic violations. And so that's what our concern is with this issue. So we haven't, as I said, we haven't been asked to do a fiscal note. We may be at some point, but I just wanted to let the committee know about that information.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. And a fiscal note has been requested, so I'm sure you'll all be involved in that before long. On the A3 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Latz, the motion is going to send this without recommendation to the Committee on Judiciary. Once the fiscal note comes back, I'll want to sit down and talk to you about that, because if there is a fiscal impact, then we're going to have to take a pretty bleak look. And in the meantime, I'll talk with Ms. McCormick, and we'll see what we can do about the exchange of information so that this could potentially work. Once again, if, we can't meet DVS's threshold, it's probably a deal killer, because they're in this process. It's a four-year process. It's this committee has spent a lot of time trying to help the Division of Vehicle Services, get a new computer, get them into the 21st century or close. So Senator Scoy would move that Senate File 884, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Latz.
Thank you.
Now we're gonna do Senator Olsen's bill, and then we're gonna skip down to Senator Carlson's bill because I want to get Senator Carlson's bill out of here today. That means that the two bills that I have, 453 and 454, are going to be heard on Thursday. Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, members, on Senate File 782, it's a post-crash inspection. I have from the Office of Pupil Transportation Safety, Lieutenant Carroll, to testify on the bill, and I'll turn it over to him.
Lieutenant Carroll, can you give us your best 2 minutes why we want to do this?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Currently, there are two standards.
And, Lieutenant, you need to state your name for the record.
Edward Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. Currently, there are two standards for post-crash inspections. One addresses commercial vehicles. The other one addresses school buses, and they're currently inconsistent. The language will bring the school bus crash requirement in line with existing commercial vehicle post-crash requirements, which will eliminate confusion for law enforcement personnel. In addition, this proposal will align Minnesota state statute with current definition for reportable crashes as established by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. By more clearly defining the post-crash investigation criteria for law enforcement personnel, the resulting changes will increase efficiency by minimizing unnecessary post-crash inspection response. The language change will coincide with future changes to the Minnesota State Accident Report, and will also have a better working relationship for the State Patrol with its industry partners and other law enforcement agencies.
Thank you, Lieutenant Carroll. Any questions for Senator Olsen or the Lieutenant? Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 782 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the floor. Senator Olsen, we might... I'll talk to you after the committee about this, all right? This bill's going to the floor. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Carlson, Senate File 766. Senator Carlson, don't worry about it right now.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm bringing you Senate File 766, which is a bill that will change the requirement of a classroom-based training for pre-permit to allowing an internet-based format. And before we get started, I have an A1 amendment, which is a delete all amendment. And I move the A1 amendment. And Mr. Chairman and members, the A1 amendment is simply a correction in some parts of the bill, which is evident in the title. It is not a homeschool bill. It is for all students, and there is some special terms in this part of statute that deals with homeschools, so we had to be sure that we included all schools.
All right. On the Carlson A1 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Carlson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill allows the department to issue a driver instruction permit to an applicant of 15, 16, or 17 years of age who has completed an internet-based theory driver education program that's been approved by the Commissioner of Public Safety and has met existing requirements, including passing the knowledge test. The important thing to remember here is that this does nothing for to change the behind-the-wheel part of driver instruction, and it has to have a department-approved curriculum for that internet-based program. I have with me two people who would like to discuss it briefly and give their testimony. And I have Mr. Gary Sifrin, the Chief Operating Officer from driversed.com,
and Debbie Prudhomme, the local owner of a driving school here in Minnesota. But first I'd like to say a couple of things, that presently in Minnesota there is a requirement that students under the age of 18 are required to take 30 hours of classroom driver education in addition to the 6 hours of behind the wheel. This bill has nothing to do with behind the wheel. The hands-on, one-to-one student-teacher behind-the-wheel training would remain the same. This legislation is not a mandate in any way. What it does do is provide a choice for parents and students to be able to use the internet-based program. And with that, what I'll do is I'll turn it over to Mr. Sifrin of driversed.com.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Sifrin. I'm the co-founder and chief operating officer of driversed.com. Thank you very much for your time today. I have a little PowerPoint presentation for you, so I'll just go through that. So this bill really just provides one option for Minnesota families, basically allowing the classroom piece of driver's education to be provided online. So this is, as Senator Carlson had noted, this is not the behind-the-wheel piece, it's just the classroom piece. This is particularly important because it frees up the licensed and driving instructors to really focus on the behind-the-wheel instruction, which is where skill building really happens. So the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, the DPS, just last month had published a study on online driver's education around the country, and they found no evidence to date to indicate that there is any performance gap between those students that take the classroom piece or the whether they take it online or in a traditional brick-and-mortar environment. And the DPS further had four implementation recommendations, which you can find on page 18. I believe you've been provided with that report. And I wanted to address those four implementation requirements in turn. So one, strict security measures to ensure that the students who enrolled is the same person who's taking the course. And I know this has been a question for the last decade since we've been providing this course. And much like in a brick-and-mortar environment, we in the online space, we erect obstacles so that it is not cost-efficient for people to cheat. There are a couple of important things about this. One, in a brick-and-mortar environment, no one takes fingerprints or retinal scans or even really checks IDs because generally 15-year-olds don't, in fact, have IDs. Secondly, the point of departure for this committee, I hope, is not that the citizens of Minnesota are out to game the system. In fact, the citizens of Minnesota ultimately have to take a test before and have the skills before they're licensed. So what we do online is we coordinate both personal validation questions, which is personal information that people wouldn't readily share with a surrogate, on the one hand, and we couple that with content validation questions, the specific content to a specific module throughout the course, and we sprinkle these questions sporadically throughout the course. Now, there are different ways of heightening the security. So in some states, for example, what we do is the student has a limited number of time to answer a personal validation question, and if they fail the question twice or three times, then they're instructed to call in to a student support center where they have to further verify their identification. The second recommendation, you'll forgive me, this isn't projecting quite right, but I can read it to you. The second recommendation by the DPS report is that internet-based curricula designed so that parents and guardians can serve as at-home instructors, thereby preserving the interaction and shared problem-solving that are inherent traditional classroom instruction. And I'd struggled with how best to represent this graphically, and what I came up with, and again, apologies that you can't quite read it, is a testimonial from an educational specialist at the Educational Service Center in Texas who did the parent-taught course with driversed.com. And one of the things he emphasizes here in this testimonial, and I'd be happy to provide this for you on paper if you like, is that his daughter actually had to work, that the course is designed for parents that want to make sure that their teen drivers are adequately trained in the classroom portion of driver's ed, and he goes on to say that he'd recommend it to any parent. Again, I can provide you with a whole host of such testimonials. It's important to note here that he himself is an educator. The third issue here has to do with interactivity, so to really focus, to make sure that the students are focused and engaged. And a few words on the various features of the course. It's not a manual online. It's not an HTML course. It's not a bunch of words on a page. That's a misconception that I'd really like to clarify here. We deploy modular course design. It's fully navigable. There are section reviews. There are 2D animations, 3D animations, assessments, and so forth. Let me actually show you what that looks like. If yeah. So as you can see here, this is a 3D traffic situation. So after you've done a narrative portion of the course, it can actually show you what an intersection looks like in full 3D. This is an example of an interactive case study. Here, the student will be confronted with an actual case study of what to do, and then asked a question. Then they have the option they pick, and then they see the consequences of what they've done. I mean, this is not a book. As you can see here, that there are a full range of full motion video and with the expansion of broadband, and we use a streaming flash technology, so everyone has access to this. So that our courses are punctuated with narrative elements, graphic elements, 2D elements, 3D elements, videos, and lots of assessments, as you'll see. So you can see even the narrative elements are coupled with graphic elements. And naturally quizzes. And there are a whole host of different types of assessments. They're not all the same. Okay, let me, in the interest of time. Okay, success. And finally, built-in timing safeguards was the last recommendation of the DPS. And we at driversed.com have a proprietary technology that can evaluate the content of a particular segment, whether it be a slice or a slide on the course. And then that particular section can be timed appropriately so that students can't move ahead faster. And then we internally have further controls where we can raise that 10%, 20%, 30%, et cetera. So it's not so this idea of, oh, well, let's just have every section of the course be 3 seconds or a minute long doesn't make sense, because we have all of these different elements to the course, and they each deserve their own timing mechanism. So we can safely address all of DPS concerns. And then there's a lot of people have concern that driver's ed is so important that one shouldn't try something new. And as the DPS report does a fine job of showing, driver's ed online for the classroom piece has been approved and operative in a great many states. I think there are 10 on this list. And in massive populations, California, Pennsylvania, Florida, Texas, and it's been met with great success.
Senator Saltzman, you have a question.
Yes, a question, Mr. Chair. And first, Senator Carlson, I want to thank you for all the legislation you've carried to address safety. I really appreciate that. While you've been sitting here giving this slideshow, I have been doing your course online. Mm-hmm. I am not the person who has signed up to take this course. Because I know their code numbers, I can take it. I have just flashed through 129 slides while you were talking, going like this. Mm-hmm. Because I passed the pretest and wrote down the answers, I did the post-test as well. You talked about you could guarantee that the person had seat time. There is now a video that is playing, and I am not watching it.
I can see that. Oh.
So I just want to mention that I'm very concerned about this bill. So I just wanted to point out that as you're saying these things, I could be a student taking this course.
Mr. Saffron.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, I would ask, are you taking the Minnesota course on driversed.com?
To that question, Mr. Chair and Mr. Saffron, I am taking a driversed.com class, and it could be from California, but I would wonder how it would be significantly different, how you would be able to address the safeguards of having a student sitting, because my daughter has taken health and FIAD online. I didn't really worry about how much she got out of those courses, because it was not going to affect her safety on a highway, or that she may or may not know she may not have had 30 hours in front of a professional driver's education instructor.
Well, let's do this. Let's get the rest of the testimony on the record. We want to vote on this bill at 3:05 because we have to be out of here by then. So, Senator Carlson, your guys' time is about drawn near, but I want to hear from Ms. Prudhomme as well.
If
Can I just have 1 minute?
Sum up.
Sum up. I do want to address that. In any case, one thing that's vitally important to understand are the benefits of online driver's education, that this is really an accessibility issue. So it's particularly, you can see here there's a lot to say in the presentation, that it's particularly important for students who in rural areas who are underserved by local driving schools or in their public high schools. It's particularly important for high achieving students who couldn't possibly schedule driver's training, as well as for working families. The result here is that those students simply wait it out. They wait till they're 18, and as a result they don't get any driver's education, including no behind the wheel. And if it's really important to know which course one is taking, because if it's not a DPS approved course, none of the safeguards would be turned on.
Ms. Prudhomme.
Senator Murphy and committee members, thank you very much. My name is Debbie Prudhomme, and I am the owner of the second largest driving school here in Minnesota. I also serve our national association at the highest level as an officer, and I've literally trained tens of thousands of teenage drivers. I also would like to just take a moment to bring your attention to the packets. I definitely won't go over those, but there are letters of support from the Homeschool Association, a very esteemed organization, Minnesotans for Safe Driving, driving school owners, and then also students. And I would just like to, you know, let you know that I really would never recommend something that would put teens in harm's way. And I've dedicated my life to actually teaching teens. And to talk to the points of security and fraud is, I think Mr. Sifrin has addressed those issues. And we don't have a Minnesota program, so we really don't know what that would look like, but I know it would have the highest of standards, just as everything that we do has. But the access issue is a very big deal. Because, you know, when somebody cannot drive 10 to 15 times, 30 to 45 miles to a class, they have a tendency to not take driver education. And they put that off until they're 18. And then when it's a practical need, when mom and dad says, you've got to drive, we need you to go get a job, we need you to take the kids to here and there, they drive illegally. And so the other states that have experienced this, and I've been traveling quite a bit and talking to a lot of people who are going through this, they've actually seen an increase in participation of driver's ed, and in particular the behind the wheel. So I think that's really where our safety benefits are. And also, I don't agree that there is a concern for quality of instruction. And I just would like to have your support on this and give the teens an option. This is not a mandate. This is an option. And I can assure you that I will still plan to give my traditional classrooms. I have no intention of eliminating those. And we will serve the Minnesota teens, whether it be online or we will serve them in the classroom. And as we have done for years, driving schools will serve them well.
Thank you, Ms. Prudhomme. Thank you, Senator Carlson. We're going to move, and I believe there's a whole host of people here to testify against this bill. So if we can get Ms. Oshwager, Aaron, and Madden first to the table. And just for the folks that are coming to the table, I mean, this isn't the first time that this bill has been in front of us, so if we could be short and to the point.
Kathy, go. Hello, my name is Kathy Roan. It's H-R-O-N, and I am a driving school owner in northern Minnesota. And I am going to refer during my couple of minutes, because when I came at the office, I have a file cabinet that I've done a year of research opposing online. Mm-hmm. I brought a briefcase. I wrote a 3-page comments to you. I've now, as you've been talking, I've cut it down to just a few paragraphs, and I do hope that they are indicator of how we do feel. And so in August of 2008, Minnesota took what I believe is a crucial step in reducing the number of teen deaths in our state. GDL was passed, putting a curfew on new drivers under the age of 18 for the first 6 months of licensure. It also limits the teen passengers in a vehicle. For those of you who supported and voted for this bill, thank you. Crashes are the leading cause of death for Minnesota teens. You know that. There are many groups in Minnesota that have worked diligently to try to reduce this number. One group is Towards Zero Death. Part of their mandate states, educating young people about responsible motor vehicle operation means more than learning traffic laws and driver's education. A well-rounded driver's education program is an essential first step in promoting lifelong driving behavior. Contrary to what prior testimony has said, there are a number of concerns in the Department of Public Safety's online. I will leave that to other people to address. I want to use my minutes for other matters. You can read through that on your own. The packet that's in your material, I believe, has highlighted a number of concerns. The highlight in that report for me is that a Texas study revealed that parent-taught, including internet, students were 57% more likely to be involved in very serious injury crashes than their school-taught peers. Important point. In 2003, Minnesota completed an extensive review of the rules which govern driver's ed. At that time, this advisory panel and the Department of Public Safety considered allowing online classroom, and this was discussed at length. The consensus was that students under 18 need the structure and interaction provided by attending class. I have 3 pages of experts' opinion opposing online. I'll be happy to give you those in another format because I'm trying to talk fast. I'm going to give you my favorite quote. This is by Tom Layton, who created Cyber School, which was America's first online high school. Mr. Layton was named a Distinguished Educator and Educator of the Year by Apple Computer and Electronic Learning Magazine. This is what he says. Online learning exists to supplement and add to a student's learning experience. It should never take the place of classroom learning with flesh and blood teachers and peers. If a student has to choose between taking no math class and an AP calculus class online, then the choice is easy. But if students have a choice between taking an AP math class at their school or taking it online, the choice is always easy. Face-to-face teaching is better. Now, I'd like to say that I've spoke with a number of people. One of the persons that I spoke with yesterday was Jim Conley. Jim Conley spent 38 years in driver and vehicle services, retiring last year. Last year, because he was employed, he was unable to make an opinion. He gave me permission to say that he is adamantly opposed to online driver's education and that he wants you to know that there are a number of good driving schools in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I do feel like I need to comment on a couple of things. Prior testimony just now stated that we as driving schools do not check ID. I am required as the authorized signer of my driving school to verify that the information on my blue card, which is the completion of course card, is accurate. I check this by birth certificate. So I do not sign a blue card without checking a birth certificate, number one. Okay. Number two, the issue of availability of driver's ed in Minnesota. I would like to defer to Mary, who wore out many markers highlighting the number of driving school programs, commercial and public school, that are in the state of Minnesota. She has a little map highlighted for you. Mary and I together do most of northern Minnesota. Not all of northern Minnesota, but most. We go to the school districts. Mary is so dedicated that she will travel 45 minutes to teach a class of 15 students. And so this is done right at the high schools through the community ed program. If you have any questions about that, I will let her answer that. My last statement, I do PowerPoint. I show videos. I give tests. What I do that an internet-based program cannot do is I do hands-on. I've got a rope here. And I'm not going to unwind this because I only have a couple minutes and I'll be so far out you wouldn't be able to hear me. But at the end of this rope, 66 feet into the rope is a black mark. And then the rest of the rope is just a little over 200 feet. What my students and I do is one of my students will hold the end of this rope and we will go 66 feet and then I'll have another student stop right there. And then another student goes to the other end of the rope, a little over 200 feet. What does this represent? This represents a car going 60 miles an hour on a flat, dry surface, and the driver is paying attention. A kid on a bicycle runs out in front of the kid. It takes 3/4 of a second for that driver who's paying attention with the perfect car on the flat, dry surface to react. That car has gone 66 feet before the brakes are applied. The rest of the length is total stopping distance. Students get it. They're not going to get it online. We have many, many visuals that we use. We do hands on hand. And the fact that we should offer a choice to our teens is, in my opinion, a poor choice. Which choice will the student take? The student, unfortunately, will take the path of least resistance. What is the best thing about the easy route, the more convenient route? Perhaps the only thing about it is it's easier, it's more convenient. Again, teenagers crash on our roads. That's what brought me to this job in the first place 17 years ago when my son was in a near-fatal crash. And again, any questions, I'll let you refer to Mary. Thank you very much.
Ms. Madden, did you have any remarks?
Yes. Kathy, I'm Mary Madden. I've been in this business for 38 years, four with my parents, before I could actually start educating students as secretary, et cetera. And I have been doing this for 34 years. I have a small map here. The big map is there. This Arrowhead area, I travel to. I bring, as Kathy said, a classroom to students in Cotton, which a graduating class of 14. They look forward to seeing me every year, and we do similar things. I can pass this around if you'd like. I would also like to say I have a constituent who was unable to make it. She holds a master in education. She owns a driving school in she owns a driving school in the Duluth area. And she says, "Let me first say, I am strongly opposed to online driver education for the following reasons. First, while online may be appropriate and even advantageous for some classes like history, English, etc., it is totally inappropriate for driver ed. If a student doesn't grasp a concept in other classes, it's not a matter of life and death. If a student does not understand or is able to gloss over material online, it could cost them their life. Second, internet-based education has not thoroughly been tested. To my knowledge, no one can definitely say that internet-based driver ed is a better way to educate drivers and that it helps save lives on the road." And this is addressed in the DPS study you have and the Texas study. "I do not think it is wise to test a theory when lives are at stake." She says that driving is interactive. Classroom needs to be interactive to prepare students to handle the social norms accepted behind the wheel. And students, her fourth point is, it may be more convenient to have students learn material online. They can do the work whenever it fits into their schedule, etc. But how important is it for each of us to have teenagers as well prepared to drive safely and defensively when we are sharing that road with them? She says she strongly believes that any legislator who votes for online driver ed classes, when there is no empirical evidence that crash rates and deaths will not increase, is in fact gambling on people's lives.
Ms. Madden, we're going to cut you off there. We've got three other people that want to place their objections, and I'm going to
grant it.
Unfortunately, if we can get the three other testifiers that have signed up to come to the table, about all you're going to be able to do is give us your name and where you're from and that you oppose the bill. So,
thank you.
I think we have Mr. Palmer, Ms. Allswager, and Mr. Hasten.
Ms. Allswager. I'm John Palmer, and I don't know where anyone got the impression that I opposed the bill. I came to testify on the bill and to inform the committee of the things that I know. When I talked to the aide, I said I simply wanted to be assured that when I left St. Cloud, that I'd make the trip and be able to testify. So,
Mr. Palmer,
I'd like to be able to say a few things. If you give me,
please sit down, Mr. Palmer. We've got just a couple seconds here, so.
My entire life has been devoted to traffic safety education. I moved to Minnesota in 1976. My doctoral dissertation at the U of M was on the role and funding of Minnesota driver education. I'm nationally recognized. I'm a former chair of the Transportation Research Board committee that examines operator education and regulation.
And I want
to call to the Senate, the committee's attention, Mr. Chairman, the existence of Senate File 11. In Senate File 11 is language that is carefully crafted to ensure that the delivery of instruction would meet high academic standards, would in fact meet the standards that are nationally recognized for the delivery of instruction. Whatever you do to the bill, at a minimum, the national standard should be recognized and delivered. And I do thank you for giving me that opportunity. I'm currently not in the business. I'm president of the Faculty Association at St. Cloud State, and I have to leave to chair my executive committee, and I don't want to be caught speeding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Ms. Osweger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Osweger, Education Minnesota, and our organization strongly opposes this bill. And may I have 30 seconds, Mr. Chair? Does that work for you at this point?
Give us your best reason why not to vote for this bill.
Our main concern is about safety and the interaction with the students that the teachers have and how they can talk about teachable moments, answer individual questions. Individual questions are not allowed to be answered directly in an immediate fashion. It's relevant to the community because they can talk about local intersections. I've been incredibly surprised and very impressed by our driver's education teachers around the state because they have become very active because they are so concerned about the safety of the kids who are getting behind the wheel and the others on the road. And I certainly could have a lot more to say, Mr. Chair, but in respect for your time, I will keep it at that. But know
well,
that we are
this bill has to go to the K-12 committee after it leaves here. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is it Mr. Heisen?
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Chip Heisen. I'm the owner of Safeway Driving School, the state's largest commercial driver education school. We're in 18 locations, and we educate about 4,000 kids a year. I'll just go to the last paragraph or two of my comments. I think there's a lot of emphasis on teacher-led classrooms, and I think that it's important to note that the producers of driversed.com recognize the importance themselves. I think it's an ultimate irony that their Rules of the Road video has a segment in it showing a teacher in a driver's education classroom presenting material to students and then answering their questions and role-playing with a student. In other words, because Internet students can't interact with a teacher, they watch a video of other students in a driver's ed classroom interacting with a teacher. That, to me, is a pretty strong validation of the need for teacher-led classrooms. Just like in the driver's ed video, when the lights come on in our classroom, a teacher answers questions, leads a discussion about the lessons that were learned and the choices that were made, and reinforces our recurring messages of attitude, responsibility, respect, courtesy, judgment. These are called teaching moments, and nothing else has the impact of them. Unfortunately, the Internet simply can't deliver teaching moments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Members, there's two folders in front of you. If you want to keep anything that's in your folder, put it in the light-colored manila envelope and put it back in the brown envelope in front of you. Anything you want to throw away, push to the front. Senator Carlson moves Senate File 766 as amended, recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Education. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Does not prevail.
Division. All in favor? All in favor, raise your hand. All in favor, raise your hand. All opposed? The chair's ears are still as good as they were last year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Motion does not prevail. Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Thank you.
Set. Meetings adjourned.